So yeah, and the React Next has been like the biggest kind of conference in Israel, I think.
Yeah, it's like, pretty big.
It is. It's like huge. I think it's the second biggest in the world.
What? Oh, really?
It might be. No, really.
Really?
Yeah.
Like
I know,
1,000 people.
Yeah. It's more. Last year there were 1,000, I know, and I know that like what used to be React Amsterdam, which is Git Nation now, and yeah. that's the
biggest.
They
have a couple thousand, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They got a couple thousand, and yeah, we're. I think they sold out like early birds in React Next like almost a half a year in advance.
That is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's crazy.
This is your first time to Israel, though, right?
Yeah, this is the furthest east I've ever been.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, amazing. How you like it so far?
Well, it's been awesome.
Yeah?
Yeah. So, I just arrived yesterday. Yeah. Still jet lagged. And, but mostly feeling fine. I was able to sleep last night. Did not sleep on the plane very much. But I did have a little bit of time to go on the beach, and it's
amazing.
Really, the hotel they put us up in is beautiful and has a really great view of the beach, and enjoyed some local cuisine, and so far so good.
Did you try to play matkot yet?
No.
You'll love it.
Yeah, you'll love it. So matkot is the paddles, when they play with the paddles on the beach, you must have seen it.
There's no net, wooden paddles.
Black ball, and you just hit the ball back and forth. That's a game.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yes, it is fun.
That's cool.
It's really fun.
It's
but
like a catch.
It's a collaborative game then, because there's no net and everything. It's you
collaborative
win and lose together.
Competitive.
I think like the goal is to keep the ball rolling like as much time as possible without it hitting the ground.
But also it's to hit it as hard as you can, so your other opponent is gonna have to kind of really,
really
try
together.
And struggle to get it.
Yeah, that sounds like
you should
fun.
Try. It's fun
That's
stuff.
Cool. Yeah. I saw beach volleyball, but this is the first time I've seen them not use their hands.
So oh, like, the feet,
yeah, feet, head, chest, whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of Brazilian style.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that makes sense actually. Yeah. I thought it might have looked like a soccer ball. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's kind of fun.
I think we also adopted something from the U.S. where they have like a little net on the floor and spike ball.
Oh, spike ball. Yeah, I have a spike ball net. My kids aren't old enough quite yet to play it, but eventually they will be. And I'm.
How old are the kids?
I have 4 kids, and the oldest is 9, then 8. And 6 and 4.
Wow. Ooh. Dude.
Yeah.
I have 1 3-year-old. Yeah. And I'm like,
that's busy.
Yeah. I got 1 4-year-old.
Just thinking about like another one is like, how does anyone do that?
Well, I mean,
they kind of take care of each other the more you have now.
Yeah, people say that.
They kind of do a little bit. I'm married and my wife does a lot to help with the kids, but the step from 0 kids to 1 kid is like huge. It's enormous impact on your life, because now you can't suddenly just like, I want to go out and get ice cream.
Yeah.
Like, the step from 1 kid to 2 kids is pretty big, but not anywhere close. And then from 2 to 3 is also quite big, because now you're outnumbered.
but from 3 to 4, you need to change your car.
Yeah,
that's true, actually. Yeah, you do
need a big one.
Now you need a bigger car. But other than that, it started getting a little bit easier, and you're like more in a routine. It's not such as big a disruption to life. At least it wasn't to me.
And probably the first one is already like big enough.
Yeah, we kind of packed him in pre-test.
But you can't leave like the 3 younger ones with the big one.
No.
Say, yeah, we're going out for a movie or something.
Yeah, not quite. We're almost there. Mm.
Like 12
dude,
is the
so
right age.
Yeah, around there. And our first is the girl, and she's, pretty responsible. But she's still 9. So I think that she will be able to manage pretty well. And she really likes having that type of responsibility. She's like, I'm the mom now. But so it's fun.
Cool. So how do you get any work done with 4 kids?
Like I said, my wife does
that we understand,
And so like during the day, I'm full-time working, and my wife is full-time mom. She doesn't have a job. She has a lot of jobs.
She has the best job.
Outside of that. And so I'm able to take care of of work, and then I come home and help. And if I have to work extra for something, I work really hard.
To an office right now?
No, I work from home. And so I do have a bedroom that is my office. And so I have a door I can close. And the kids mostly understand that I, you know, if you watch my live streams, you might see them occasionally pop in.
Yeah, I've worked with a kid from home. It's they never respect that.
Yeah.
Also, true for bathroom time.
Yeah.
They don't get boundaries.
Yeah, no boundaries. Bathroom, no. What?
Yeah, exactly. You gotta lock that door. they're pretty good, and they get used to dads at work. And honestly, when I started working from home, I would always just tell people, you're going to get interrupted at work, no matter what, whether you're at home or in the office. And I'd just rather get interrupted by my kid who wants to show me a drawing than a coworker who wants to tell me about the football game I don't care about.
Right.
You know? So you get to choose your interruptions, I guess, if you can work from home. And I like the kids' interruptions more.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I'm interested to know a little bit about your journey in tech. How do you get into it? So we talked about you went to school and did information systems, mm-hmm. right? But that didn't exactly relate to coding.
Yeah, not specifically. At BYU, at least, the coding track, it's not official, but mm-hmm. there's definitely more of an emphasis on coding than the information systems programs at other schools that I met people who went through those programs. And it seems
were you a computer geek, a kid?
Kid? So younger, I definitely was into computers. That was a big thing for me. And it wasn't just video games, it was just being on the computer. I just really enjoyed that. And I made videos and things as a kid. And that's what I thought I was going to do, is just be a video editor. I decided when I went to school, when I was in early teens, my friend was really into computers, and he was a programmer and stuff, and he wrote this server and things, and he was trying to explain to me how this worked, and because our goal was to make a game and then have it running on its own and making us millions of dollars.
Yeah, of course.
That was the
goal. Everyone.
And so he was going to teach me programming, and he taught me what a number was in you know, the different data types. He taught me what a number was. I was like, okay, I get that.
And what?
It was C.
C.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. And then he taught me a Boolean. I was like, true, false. All right. Yep. Sure. Yeah. That makes sense. And then he tried to teach me what a string was. And I just couldn't get it. I don't know why. I don't remember what about it was so confusing, but I just did not get it. And I was like, okay, you do the computer programming stuff, and I'll just do the marketing or whatever. And of course, that never really panned out. But I threw together some HTML pages with CSS and stuff. But I never really got super into actually programming. I did put together a lot of custom campaigns in Age of Empires and Warcraft and Starcraft, all that. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And that's sort of coding, because you're if they get into this box, then do this thing. And I really enjoyed that. And so I think it was the higher level stuff made a lot more sense to me, because I could see the outcome of what I was trying to accomplish. And it may be more limited, like the StarCraft thing, it might be a little limited on what capabilities you have. But the things that you can do, you can be very productive. And so the lower level languages of C, when I was going into college in electrical engineering, they had me on C and even machine code and assembly and stuff. And
math
I was
lab
just,
too, no?
I don't know. But I did do, we did do Java, but we did lower level Java, let's make a linked list and stuff.
Oh,
and I just never really why? I just didn't connect why it was so useful. And so it wasn't until I went on a mission for my church for 2 years, and then I came back, and I still wasn't sure what I wanted to do. But it wasn't until I took I joined up as an intern for a company that had me doing some monkey work task stuff. And at the same time, I was also required to take another programming class. I thought, the stuff I'm learning in my programming class, I could probably apply to this monkey work task. I could automate that. And so I did, and that was when it clicked for me. I was like, oh, that's why programming is fun, because I can accomplish an actual thing to do something useful. And so that was my journey into deciding I wanted to be a programmer. I hadn't decided I wanted to be a programmer. But that was the first, the start for me.
And this to, was about when?
That was 2012, I think, 2011.
I know we just started talking about tech, and this is like a tech podcast, but can I ask you about the mission
thing? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's
full
really
disclosure, I don't know what a Mormon is.
Well, so, I do. I can tell you all about it.
So, but I know, like, I heard Tanner also on the podcast saying he was like on a mission.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I never looked it up.
And also, what's in the water in Utah? You got so many programmers.
I know, Tanner, like, I heard Ryan.
Tanner, Michael.
Yeah, like, I know there's like, a, it's something in Christianity,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know anything else.
Yeah, sure. So, yes, Christianity. So that's one of the things that really appealed to me for coming out here was to be able to go see Jerusalem.
Of course.
Of course, it's a very special place for us. But, we are a Christian-based faith. We believe that Christ is our Savior. We believe that Heavenly Father is our Father, and that the Holy Ghost testifies of both of them. And that by patterning our life after the life of the Savior, we can return to live with our Heavenly Father again and have perfect happiness, whatever that means.
This is something Mormon
eternity.
Or Christian?
Christian, but also the Mormon, that's a nickname for us, for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Mm-hmm.
But that this is our belief. And I think... Christian, there are a lot of denominations and various opinions and ideas of
like
and beliefs. Specifically, the Latter-day Saint belief is that our Savior saved us through His atonement, just in Gethsemane, wherever that was,
mm-hmm.
and by patterning our lives after His and striving to be the best people we can and repenting. Taking advantage of the atonement whenever we do make a mistake, that we can live with our families forever.
Mm. That sounds cool.
Yeah. It is. Yeah, I think so.
And so what's a mission, really? Like, what is it when you, like, go on a mission from your church? What does that mean?
Yeah, yeah. So mission is a lot of the members of the church when you grow to adulthood, when you turn 18 and graduate from high school. Then you will apply to serve to your mission wherever they send you. So
it's like they just take a name out of a hat, basically.
Countries.
So it's like the army for us.
There's it's actually the leaders of the church have a meeting each week and go through the applications from all of the missionaries each week and decide where. They know where missionaries are needed and what missionaries can serve. I ended up serving in the Missouri Independence Mission. That's like Central America area, Central United States. You just serve with another companion that is selected also not
randomly.
By you. There's inspiration involved in all that, but yeah. Yeah, you live with them. Constantly with them.
Wow.
Only time you get privacy is in the bathroom, sort of thing.
Are you
still
keep
good each
friends
other
with
safe
that
and everything.
Companion?
Sometimes you're not good friends with them when you have. but most of the time, it's a really awesome. You develop a really strong friendship. It's kind of like having a roommate that you mm-hmm. just work with.
That's cool. And you do that for a couple of years.
Yeah,
two years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is really like the army.
There's definitely a lot of growing up involved in that experience. And when I served, you actually had a year after graduating high school before you would apply, typically.
Mm.
I had a semester of school. And so I had a little bit of opportunity to like move away from home. Now the missionaries literally go from home to the mission, and I don't know how they manage that because that, there's a lot of growing up just in leaving home, and then on top of that, you have all the responsibilities as a missionary. That's a lot of growing to do. So
we don't really have that concept of like, because what's like leaving home in Israel? It's like you're
home
like
till
a 30 minutes away. You
that
don't
too.
Leave until you're 30.
Now,
but also, it's like, how far are you? You're still coming to your mom for like Shabbat dinner every week.
And lots of people in the United States do that too, and even in our church as well. For me, I went to school and I'm 4 hours away. And then you're on your mission and you don't come home for that entire 2 years. You do get to these days they get to call home. I would get to call my family twice a year, Christmas and Mother's
Day. Wow.
What?
Yeah. What? Why?
Wow.
Well, they just wanted you to focus on the mission, I guess. But no, like I said, now they do, you can't call each week. But I would just email, every week. And
so email, internet is okay. So.
Yeah, yeah. Yep,
so if you iMessage, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be an interesting experiment to see if the Israeli army bans communication.
Oh,
and, like,
no.
You can call twice a year.
No.
The army would get dismantled.
Yeah, that's true.
Would, like, not
all the Jewish
here.
Mothers. Ah!
Yeah. Oh, storming the gates.
It's definitely, it was a sacrifice. And when my older brothers, before email was a big thing, like, they would just write home and call twice a year. But it definitely is an opportunity to really focus and decide what you really want to spend your time doing. And I mean, I appreciate now that they can call weekly. And when my kids, if they decide to go on missions, I'll appreciate being able to talk to them. It was a really excellent experience for me. I grew up a lot.
Yeah, I hear, like, seems like I heard people talk about it, like, on podcasts and stuff. And seems like it's always, like, a very, like, meaningful experience to people.
Yeah, honestly, it impacted everything that I do now.
That's absolutely cool. Yeah. That's absolutely cool.
Yeah, he's on a mission. I think, like, also in the world of JavaScript, you were kind of on a mission to kind of teach people, help out.
Yeah, definitely a big part of who I am. And a lot of that's probably on a mission as well.
And your current mission is to help the world see the goodness that is Remix.
Yes, that is. I am preaching the
what
Remix
a segue.
Gospel.
Yeah, great, great job,
Scott
Roman.
Zielinski, Scott, watch out! I'm coming for you.
I was just teaching everybody React all the time. Adam Wathman just recently tweeted about how he pretty much, his business model is just do whatever he wants, and hopefully enough people also are interested in what he's doing.
Yeah, that's kind of like our podcast motto.
Yeah, yeah, you know? It's awesome.
He has that Disney quote. You know that Disney quote?
Oh, no.
We make money to make movies. We don't make movies to make money. He always says that.
I love that. I think that's great. And that's exactly how I have approached the teaching that I do. I was at PayPal, and they wanted me to join up with their teaching crew. Their official, like, education thing at PayPal. And I said no, because they teach whatever the managers want their engineers to know. Mm. And I don't teach what other people want me to teach them. I teach what I want to teach them. And so, and that just happens to have worked out. So I was really into testing. I have a lot of opinions on that. And so I'm going to make workshops, and I've got these workshops. They don't scale well, so I'll make a course. And now they scale really well. And I started getting into React, and so now I'm doing workshops, and I'm they don't scale very well, and so now I make a course. And that was when I was working with Ryan and Michael on this thing that they were working on with Remix and giving them feedback. I was super bought into what they were doing, and so they made it available in the developer preview. I got a license and started doing my website, and I was like, oh, shoot. Now I don't want to teach anything but Remix, and I've got testing JavaScript and Epic React that I've been wanting to update, and I can't do that anymore. And
because you don't feel
because I'm not
passion.
As excited about it. Luckily, I will stop selling testing JavaScript and Epic React when it is no longer valuable. Like if it's so far out of date that I think you should not learn that.
But what's happening with those? Like
they're
different avenues.
Done. I am done with those. Now, like I said, I will stop selling them when they're not valuable. So they're still super valuable. Luckily, not a whole lot has changed in the testing world. And a couple breaking changes. And I do update them and say, like, with notes, like, here are the things that changed. I'm just not going to re-record videos. That takes too much
time. But what about,
like,
the actual libraries?
Yeah, the libraries haven't changed much. Even React 18 wasn't a huge change. They added some stuff, but no breaking changes to my content. Which is, I appreciate that. With Remix, I was just like, all I want to teach is Remix. That's it for me. I feel like it just drastically simplifies so much of what we are doing in our day-to-day React that it would be silly for me to want to teach anything else. So after rewriting my website in Remix, I just decided, okay, all I want to do is teach Remix. And Ryan and Michael said, well, that sounds great. How about you come do that with us? I said, that sounds great to me too. Let's do that.
That sounds like a good plan, yeah.
You know, my introduction to Remix was, it became open source, and then it was right around when React Server Components came out. Mm-hmm. And I was like trying Remix, and I was I couldn't wrap my head around it. And I was tweeting like this whole idea of data requirements live on route boundaries is like naive. It's like not, because I came from like React Query, that type of mentality of like, you know, every component sort of describes their data dependencies, mm-hmm. and React Server Components really fit that model. Yeah. And I was like, that's naive, and like, it's like a nice idea, but that's naive, and like React Server Components are like a much better developer.
Better mental model.
Yeah, like a better mental model. And then Ryan commented, was like, I was like posting like I have like this pro. I was trying to do the real world app, that one Conduit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was trying to do that, and then he commented, and he was like, "Do this and this and this." And I was like, trying to do it. I was like, "Oh my God, it does work!" And I was like tweeting, "I was so wrong." Yeah. You know.
Well, I wish I could say I've never put my own foot in my own mouth. But yeah, it's surprising. It's true, like we want to co-locate our data requirements with the components that require them, and route boundaries are not quite that, but they're close enough.
Right.
And the benefits from a developer experience and user experience standpoint are worth that enough, right? So in every app that I have ever built, the route boundaries are close enough.
So, leave me alone, as Ryan said. It's close enough.
Yeah, it's close enough. It works.
In his talk.
Yeah.
That's right.
No, but if you think about any other app and generality, like websites and stuff like that, like the route tells you where you are, the route tells you where your data is.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Even like with a different framework, like Next.js, like they got get server-side props, so you got the page, and you know what you can get from the server, what you get from the client.
Right.
At all.
I think the point is that we sort of forgot how to model our app. For me, I like came up in that like create React app phase. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we sort of forgot how to model our apps, I don't know what the right phrase here, on the URL? Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah, sure.
The URL. Mm-hmm. So we sort of forgot how to do that. I started out from
Well, it's like you forgot how to write forms with React. It's
exactly. Yeah, totally. We forgot how to use links. So that like, and then you try out Remix and you're like, I can get this to work. Like, and then you're like, oh, I need to use the URL now. Yeah. You know? So, and there are like so many benefits to using the URL that are not, you know?
Like prefetching, for example.
Yeah.
Being like, like you can only prefetch because you know the URL, like it, you know where that link is going to, and so if you don't know from the URL what data and CSS and images and everything that you need, then you cannot prefetch. You have to render first,
right? Mm-hmm.
And that is a real shame.
Yeah.
And so that's honestly, I don't know of any other framework that has that capability, because Remix has layout nested routing.
Yes.
That association between the data requirements and the code that requires it. You do also get that potentially from Relay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But then you have to use Relay.
Right.
And Relay is just this really big ball of amazing but complex code.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this, React Query just added React Router to their. They have like a table, a comparison table with like SWR, Apollo Client, all that stuff. They just added Router to it, and you
that
sort
makes
of
sense.
Yeah, and you sort of see like React Router from all of them is like the only one that has, you know, those capabilities of like prefetching and also like automatic refetching on mutations.
Yeah, that's cool.
And
that
that's really
that.
Yeah, and that's really, you can only do that with the URL, and it's sort of. I think the community is like, for me at least, it felt like that way when Remix was introduced. We were like, wait, like, you know, it sort of came back to us. Wait, like, there's this URL thing and it's amazing, yeah. You know? And why did we ever, like, no, abandon this?
It's the
this
same,
thing?
Like, when these new frameworks and meta frameworks kind of, you're suddenly, oh, right, we'll render in a server and then we'll yeah. Push it down. And
why did we not do that?
Well, yeah. And then hydrating on the client and making it a spa experience from there, like, go from MPA to SPA.
That I want to get back to yeah. Hydration and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I can talk at length about hydration.
Yeah. So you go. I know
okay,
what you want.
I got a question for you about hydration.
Yeah.
So what do you think or feel about these new types of frameworks coming in, like SolidJS and QuickJS, and like Michiko Heveri going around and saying hydration is pure overhead.
Yeah. He sure has that opinion, doesn't he?
He has that opinion. I went to a workshop with him about QuickJS, and I tell you the truth, cool. I feel like I'm kind of sold about like sure, the whole yes. concept.
So a year ago at InfoBip conference in Croatia, he and I went out to dinner. He got this big tomahawk steak, because that's all he eats is steak. And it was delicious, but... he's talking with me about this QuickJS thing, and I give him lots of really helpful feedback on his API. He completely changed the syntax
it's
and everything.
It's completely React
from
JS6.
So you're welcome.
Yeah. I was like, I'm still not a user.
Not
I'm a believer.
This.
I'm not a user yet.
And he didn't believe me. I was like, I don't think. And then he changed it all, and he's like, yeah, you're right. This might be better. So resumable apps is the big thing. And I'm honestly very amazed at what he's created. It's very awesome. Here's the point where I'm not sure I'm sold on it. Mm-hmm. And partial hydration as well. So the idea is that the HTML should be enough for everything that the user's looking at. And it's only when the user starts interacting with things that you need interactivity JavaScript, right?
Right.
So why do we send the JavaScript and hydrate stuff if the user's never going to interact with it? That's the idea behind islands and partial hydration and resumable apps, all of that. So here's the issue that I have with that. A big part of the reason that we want to do that is because downloading that JavaScript is going to take time, right? It takes bandwidth and all of that. So if we act under the assumption that downloading JavaScript takes time, then when a user wants to interact with something, they have to wait for a time for their interaction to actually take place.
Right. So that is, by the way, something that I asked as well. Mm-hmm. And he did have an answer for that. And they do have prefetching. And they can kind of hint towards like knowing somebody's going to hover above it. And then they get that little chunk of JavaScript.
Right. So that's the fun part here. So if we can prefetch that stuff, then how do you know what to prefetch? Okay, so they're going to hover over it. Well, what if they're on a really bad connection, and so it takes 300 milliseconds to actually download the button click handler? Okay, that is absolutely a thing in many countries.
Right.
So. A hover will save you maybe 100 milliseconds, maybe 200. And maybe like if the user's really slow, it could do the whole thing for you. So if we act under the assumption that we are not doing this because it takes a long time to load JavaScript, and so we're going to offload that to right before the user actually interacts or right after they do, then you have to start thinking about prefetching stuff right before they start interacting. And so how do you know what to prefetch? Well. Maybe you can have some sort of analytics or like, oh, it's pretty common for them to do this or that. That sounds like a lot of complexity to me.
Yeah.
And so why don't we just prefetch more stuff? Let's just prefetch. How about we prefetch everything?
Yeah, but then if you prefetch.
We just did, why did we do this whole complex thing if we're going to load it all anyway?
Right.
But what if the user doesn't scroll down, for example, and
sure,
you don't get like the JavaScript that's below the fold?
Yeah, sure.
But it's like, what is really like, how big of an impact
exactly
is
that exactly
that's
that
interesting.
That's the big problem is there are so many other things that you can do to speed up your app by a way bigger margin than what you can do with partial hydration now
agreed but the biggest part and like the slowest part is executing JavaScript, right?
Sure.
Loading and executing, evaluating and executing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So the bigger the bundle, the bigger it's going
to
be.
Right. So I do think that it's important to reduce the size of the bundle. I'm just thinking about of all of the things that we can spend our time on, and we got to consider the return on the investment. And I'm just not convinced that partial hydration is the thing that we can spend our time on to get the biggest bang for our buck. Speeding up your server is probably a better thing to focus on. And so I'm not saying that partial hydration will not be faster. It totally would be. Like, from a technical standpoint, it is. It's like, part of me thinks that we have found this problem that's a very interesting puzzle, and we found a very great, interesting solution to this puzzle, but it turns out that solving that puzzle doesn't really push the needle as far or as much as the amount of work that it's taking to solve.
Yeah, who was this? Sean Wicks said that also.
Yeah, I
remember that. And just a few days ago, I saw Adam Rackus like tweeting out and saying, okay, yeah, we're kind of trying to solve all these problems and partial hydration and whatnot. At the end of the day, a lot of developers work on like SaaS or just big apps that you need a login.
So yeah, cares about apps Lighthouse that make scores. Money yeah. are, you know, they're in. And so that initial page load, while important, is not nearly as important as transitions between pages and actual interactivity. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's the thing that you always want to ask is, what metric are you trying to improve with this?
What are your KPIs as a business? Yes. What are your KPIs as a developer, as a product?
Are you going to sell more Netflix subscriptions by having partial hydration? Probably not.
Right.
And so and even like KPIs is kind of higher level idea, but like even lower level ones like time to first byte, sure. Okay, what about content layout shift? What about time to interactive? Like, think about those metrics and make sure that you solving this particular problem is the biggest bang for your buck on some of those metrics as well.
Right. And also with like SSR, if you do it right and you get rid of that like moment, you get rid of that Lodash, right? Because you do that stuff on the server. Ideally, your bundles shouldn't be that big.
Yeah, Remix shrinks bundles like an enormous amount. Like there's so little in your JavaScript bundle in a typical Remix app because so much of your stuff is running on the server.
Right, exactly. That's like one of the big selling points for me against like something like Next.js, where like that bundle, like that JavaScript never gets to the client, you know? And I really think that, you know, you can really save probably like megabytes of JavaScript on that stuff.
But I'm really interested to hear Ken's opinion about why do you think Remix is better than Next.js? That's a spicy one. Yeah. Now I'm gonna have to say I'm a big Next.js fan. I owe part of my career to Guillermo Raut for creating that framework because it really is incredible. I read the post, of course, of Remix versus Next. And,
you didn't read the whole
thing. I read the whole thing. Yeah, I talked to you the other day.
It's like 2 hours
afterwards.
It's really long. It's you really got to read the whole thing to really get all the nuance across. And honestly, for anybody listening, the TLDR is that Remix is better in every way.
Hands down. Forget about it. Don't
like,
go check.
The only thing that... Well, I was going to say the only thing Next has going for it above Remix is the how long it's been around. But Remix is just React Router with more features. So React Router has been around much longer than Next.js. But and it also has way more users than Next.js as well. So like a lot more. like React Router is used in around 6 to 7 of every 10 React apps. Period. Mm-hmm. That's like an enormous amount of React apps. It's nuts. So anyway, the blog post is really the best place to find all the nuance and everything. What we effectively did was we took the... So who can build the best app in a given framework? Probably the framework developers, the ones who are trying to show you, here's how you build this. And so we decided, well, let's take the best that can possibly come out of Next, their e-commerce demo, and we'll migrate it over to Remix, and we'll also rewrite it in Remix. So we'll do both, and we can compare. And at the end of the day, the user experience was better, And the we took the it was
which user experience, the user itself using the app or the developer experience of
The developer experience was also better. So if you take the interaction with the Shopify API, the Next.js amount of code for that Shopify interaction was around almost 8,000 lines of code, and in Remix it was 608.
Wow.
So how do you explain that exactly?
How do you explain that? Because Remix is amazing.
Yeah. No, but again,
the fact that it only runs in the server. I think.
Yeah, exactly. So Remix, what really differentiates Remix is it decides that, hey, the network that stands between the client and the server, that chasm is the hardest part of web development, period. Whether you're Rails and shooting grappling hooks over with Livewire or whatever else, I can't remember.
Hotwire.
Yeah. There's Livewire from
Livewire is from Laravel.
Yeah. And then LiveView from Elixir, Phoenix. So whatever it is, that server thing shooting grappling hooks over the chasm, or if you're Next shooting grappling hooks over with your API routes.
Right.
Wherever you are, that is the hardest part of the whole thing. You've got React Query for Create React App. Same thing. That is by far the most difficult part of building a web app. I mean, there's like scaling and all that, of course. But as far as like your code that you write, that is the hardest part. Remix says, that's mine. I'll take that, and then I will make it for you. I'll make it feel like you're coding in the late 90s. Because that was the easiest way to code all of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I make a write to a database. The browser says, go get me that stuff, and it sends it. There's no state going on in there. The store is the database.
Right. Yeah.
And so if you can have that mental model with the enhanced with the tech that we have in the modern age, get a remix of that mental model and the modern age tech, then you get 608 lines to interact with Shopify.
But I'm interested in something else. How about like, this conversation about Remix versus Next is like, you know, there was like a lot of talk around it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I don't hear as much is like, I looked, for example, I looked at the code base for your site, right? And
just keep in mind that
my site,
it's way overscoped. Like nobody should build a blog like my site
is. But what I was, I'm a Laravel dev, you know, I came from Laravel. Looking at it, I thought was like,
We love you anyway.
Yeah, thank you.
We love you because of it.
Yeah. And I was looking at it and thinking like, you know, this was like, would probably be like half the lines of code if you use Laravel. Or obviously Rails, right? Or whatever, Django, whatever, these like 20-year-old, you know, frameworks.
I'd be surprised if you could do what my site does in half the lines of code with Laravel. Now, you could do a lot of what it does. You can do what you think it does, but there are a lot of things that it's doing that you don't see, and that is saving you a lot of code.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look, I don't know if it's like whatever like the number is, but I feel like when you work with like Laravel, for example, Laravel, Rails, whatever, these frameworks, they sort of,
they have Rails for you.
Yeah. They like guard validation, input validation. You don't need to make a decision if you want to use Zod or Yup or whatever.
Yeah.
You do it the Laravel way. You need a queue. You need to like background jobs. You don't need to go with like
Bull. Like the same in Ruby on Rails.
Exactly.
Like gems.
Yeah. We tell you this is like how you do it. This is how you configure your like queue driver. This is how you configure your mailer. You know, this is like it is like very, very, very structured
and built in.
Obviously, the developer experience of like Remix, where you get that fast interaction, is like beautiful. But like thinking about what we talked about before, about like what does the business care about, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of the times, if you're thinking about it from like a business perspective, then you probably have better like dev velocity. You might get not as good as a user experience, right? Because you get that full page reloads.
Yeah, but DX is part of UX, right? So yeah, that's also an important input. Yeah.
Right. So I'm asking myself, like, does Remix plan on trying to, you know, go more in that direction of like, this is how we do like form validation.
Mm-hmm.
This is how we do like queue jobs. This is how we do mail. This is how we do, you know.
Yeah, another one for that. this is how we do micro front ends.
Hmm. Well, let's talk about micro front ends after I get to your your question. So, I don't know for sure whether that is in our future or not. It's definitely something. So the cool thing is that we solved the hardest part. That was the network chasm, right? Mm-hmm. And now we can go on either side and just start eating stuff of like the common things that people do. And that's exactly what our stacks was for, is like, all right, so here's how we would do it, like deploy to fly.io with Postgres database and all the configurations and everything that, that you'd have there. And now that's your code, because we don't have the time to build libraries for that right now. Like, we're just working on other things. And so here's a project generator for you.
And that's how I broke the FedBytes website, by the way.
Oh, what did you do?
I tried to move from Netlify to Vercel.
Yeah, that's difficult.
Yeah.
For another time.
For another time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so anyway, I think that eventually maybe. One of the, like, to argue against that, one of the things that I love about the React ecosystem is that there's an outrageous amount of innovation going on in this space. When I was in the AngularJS ecosystem, or in many other more, I guess, like convention or built-in systems, like Ember, for example, if you are working on a project, and Rails is probably this way as well, and the built-in solution doesn't work quite well for you, in that ecosystem, you think that you're the one at fault, and you have to work around it, and you have to make something work, make it work. Maybe you open an issue and say, hey, this is my use case. Please help me fix that. In React, because they don't have a router, and you're like, I need routing, I guess I'll build my own router. So now you're innovating yourself. As a member of the community, you're innovating a router. There's no like blessed animation library, so now you're making Framer. And like, so that is why you look at, I mean, there's also the fact that it's just so big, but a big part of why React's community is innovating so much is because there aren't blessed solutions. And so, yeah, maybe Remix will have more blessed solutions for queuing libraries and ORMs and mailers and stuff, but the JavaScript ecosystem itself is pretty into this whole, like, modular
Lego.
Lego thing. And
Android
so,
user type of feeling. Yeah, maybe. That's what I
think. Let's build our own phone. Yeah. Make our own editor. We're all using Vim. I think that there is something to be said for, let's just focus on the thing that we're really good at and let the community innovate around it. I mean, if we were to do an ORM, I think we'd be out of our minds to use anything but Prisma under the hood.
Yeah.
And so, like, maybe you just do that. And that's kind of what the stacks are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I was just, you know, the example that always comes to my head is when in Laravel, when you validate the request, you can specify that I want this email field to be unique from the user's table, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You cannot do that if you don't own the data layer.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
Yeah.
You can never do that. Yep. And it's like, try and validate that, you know, do that by yourself. Is like not that trivial, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I totally agree with it, what you're saying. And for me at this point, I like, you know, picking and choosing, and I like,
We all do that. That's like why we love it.
Right.
That's
kind of fun.
Yeah.
Right.
It's fun, but again,
but it's not exactly productive.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Like I watch.
Tell your manager, oh no, I need to take like 3 days to choose a state management library.
You don't have to do that with Remix. But, yeah. But no, you're totally right. And I think about DHH's blog in 15 minutes talk years ago.
Right.
And just like he made a table and now he's got a page. Yeah. And that seems pretty cool. And I think that you could manage that without changes to Remix. Like, so that could happen in the ecosystem. That level of productivity is really cool. There are opportunities.
Trade-offs, obviously.
Yeah, trade-offs there. Like, the other thing is, there's one thing as far as developer productivity that goes into generators, which that largely was. That helps developer productivity. What helps more though is optimizing for change, because that's what's going to be happening a lot more, is how can you make it so that when a changed requirement shows up, the developer doesn't have to change so much code. Or they know exactly what changes need to be made. And I think that Remix has nailed that really well.
Right.
Though we don't have the generators as much yet, we optimize for change really well. And there are already some really great libraries that hook up Prisma with Zod and all the form validation and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I realize that that's not the best, where like you have to kind of vet your own libraries. But I'm pretty pleased with where Remix is at currently with regard to adaptability.
Yeah.
And talking about adaptability, what about adapting to something like Preact, for example?
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, absolutely. We're super into that. So
I'd be more interested in like Vue, actually.
Yeah, no, yeah, that also. Yeah.
Like so, also making it framework agnostic, because in the end it's a router, right? Mm-hmm. And it kind of handles your data loading from the server and all that, so why does it have to be React?
Yeah, exactly. Good question. so we originally we weren't super interested in that question because, I mean, frankly, by any metric that that you can find, React is almost 3 times as widely used as all the other frameworks combined. So like,
which is incredible.
Yeah, that's outrageous. So focusing on React seems like a pretty good move for us. But I like the idea of Preact, especially because we've been able to bring the bundle size down so much. Preact just like fits on a single screen. It's nuts. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very much interested in that. And when we actually had somebody join the team who was on the side building his own Vue Remix thing. And he was very interested in Vue support. And so what we have decided to do is take all of the, we're doing a couple things at once. So we're taking a lot of really cool features from Remix and bringing it into React Router. And we wrote a blog post called Remixing React Router that describes that. But that blog post could also be called Unreacting React Router. So we're basically rewriting React Router in a non-breaking way, just new features. To have the Remix Transition Manager, which is responsible for the forms and like all data mutations and loading, and as well as routing. And so we're basically creating Remix Router. Mm-hmm. And when you have Remix Router, then React Router is just an adapter. It's like here are the hooks, here are the components, and then you make a Preact adapter. That's like native Preact, not a Preact compat thing. Mm-hmm. And then you make a Vue one. And we've already got these. From community members. There's also a Svelte one and an Angular one, and then of course Preact and Vue, and that is like in the next couple weeks.
That's cool.
We've already got a pre-release of
Remix Router. The same journey as testing library.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, that's exactly what happened. Testing library. I had all the React stuff in there. I was like, wow, there's basically nothing that has to do with React except these couple of methods. So I'll just pull those out, and now I have DOM testing library that like you have. All frameworks and testing tools and everything are supported now.
Right. Actually, this whole transition with React Router just made my job harder, because I'm now in the position where we need to working on like the company I work for, Vin, is like working on their web infrastructure, and we need to decide like how are we gonna, you know, what router are we gonna take. Mm. Pun intended.
React Query days,
it was like no contest with like Remix.
Oh, React Query. Well,
I was just thinking about like SSR versus like CSR. So back in the like React Query days and like manually refetching and like manually setting up suspense boundaries, it's like nobody got time for that.
Yeah.
It's like hell no. But now with React Router 6.4, you're like, oh damn! It's like it's I'm getting all the DX improvements now in client side rendering, and like client side rendering is like easier in some ways than like server side rendering. It's like, now what do we do? You know, I made this table. I made this comparison table, client side rendering and server side rendering. You know, basically like React Router 6.4 versus Remix. Mm-hmm. And I posted it to the Remix general channel.
Actually, Ryan commented that it's a good table. So,
there you go. Yeah, he doesn't like tables. So, yeah,
it's like a good write-up. So I'm happy with the thing. But it's really like a tough decision now because I've been building like React Router's 6.4 apps this like past week. And it's like really good. There are some discrepancies with Remix, but it's like really good. You get like great user experience. You don't get prefetching. You don't get like caching.
Yeah.
But other than
enhancement,
that,
yeah.
So I'm curious to hear what you think about that.
Yeah. I so what's really cool about this is there are a lot of places that do not care at all about the initial load at all.
Like exactly.
They don't care about SEO. Personally, I think it's a better user experience. It is worth it to me, even in those situations where they don't care about the initial load. I just like that you don't have things popping up into place and interstitial pages and whatever.
Just people don't have patience to wait.
If I paid for this app and I'm logged in and like,
I want it
to be fast. And that's the best way you can get that is through SSR. That said, a lot of apps can't do that. And so by having Remix Router and all of these features in the router, and then you can start using it today with your existing client side app, you can migrate to Remix very easily. In 10-minute increments, you can get from where you're at to Remix.
With a React router.
Yeah.
I'm interested to know, how do you see a migration path from Next.js to
Remix? Next.js is more complicated because it doesn't use React router, and Gatsby is the same. Mm-hmm. So we have members of our community who are doing that. I can't say what they're doing for Gatsby, because I migrated from Gatsby, but I rewrote it from scratch. So I can't really say too much for that. But for Next, what one of our community members is doing, Sergio, you might recognize him.
Yeah.
He's like very helpful.
He's like the fastest responder
on
Earth.
He is so,
like,
so
it's like
helpful.
Everything you post on the general channel.
And he's very smart, very good, very helpful in our community. So what his company is doing is they're taking, they put Next.js in Express, and then they put Remix in Express, and then they just determine which one to route to based on the routes that are migrated so far. And then just over time, they're migrating their routes. So that's the approach that they are taking. It seems to work out. You could do the same thing with Nginx, just have two different services and just route in that way. But that, to me, it seems like the most straightforward way to go about this. And what that means, though, is that your users get full page refreshes between them.
I don't know. At what point in the industry did we say that's not
That's
good?
Not okay.
Full page
See, at PayPal, that's what we did. And so we're coming back to microservices
Amazon.
Now. Or micro front ends. So with the biggest reason that I see micro front ends being useful is so you don't have those page transitions. If you don't care, then why do you need to have all of the apps in one app? Because that's the only difference between shipping independently, totally separate apps, and having a micro front end. From the user experience side, the only difference is transitions without full page refresh. PayPal, we didn't care. Going from your PayPal homepage to the transfer app, full page refresh, like as long as that's fast.
Right, but I think it all has to do with the organizational structure, right?
Yeah. Well, that's really what they always say, is it solves organizational problems.
But this, what you said right now, works the same way, right?
Yeah, no, it does.
With Remix, potentially you could just have a nested layout, right? Mm-hmm. And then have like a page which is a different app. Route.
Yeah, but if you did a full page refresh between them and you didn't care about that, then they could be completely separate and deploy independently.
Different repos and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that would solve the same problem.
To talk about micro front ends, because some people just can't give them up.
Such a buzzword. But
yeah,
like
it,
the
kinda,
past
it
three
kind
years,
of is. Like
it is. I hate it.
It's overhyped.
I did it in two of the last companies I was in, and it's such a big headache.
The thing is, you can prefetch an entire document. You know that, right?
Yeah.
So if you think somebody's going over to this page and you don't want a slow transition experience, you can prefetch that thing, and the user clicks it, and it's there.
Right.
And so it is still a full page refresh technically, but it feels.
That's why I'm waiting for the page transition API and
And
all that.
Yeah, then you can animate.
Wow,
that would be
amazing.
Very cool. So let's assume that our business people are like, you're all fired if you have a full page refresh between these apps. Okay, so now we got to do a micro front end.
Right.
in Remix, there are there's already a library called Tiny Frontends that that supports this. There's a difference between horizontal front ends and a vertical. Right. I did the opposite, but yeah.
And
okay. I actually am not so into micro front ends that I understand the distinction. But this Tiny Front Ends only does one of those. I'm not sure which. Mm-hmm. And so the Adrian, the one who worked on it, said that he's looking into doing supporting both. That's what I would where I'd start if I wanted to do micro front ends with Remix. And there are other people who are working on this problem. But it's not a enough bang for your buck for what we're doing, so we're not focusing any time on it.
I'm guessing you probably heard of like Webpack 5 model federation.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, one of our the members of our team implemented module federation with Webpack at his company, Lululemon.
Zach Jackson.
Yeah, he was there. Another thing that I'll mention.
Jacob.
Jacob Ebby. Yep.
Yeah. I've been in contact with him.
He's awesome. Yeah, he's a brilliant engineer. He's the one who first started experimenting with the deferred AP.
Yeah.
Just like, whoa. My talk tomorrow is going to go into that.
Oh, cool.
It's going to be so sweet. So, but the other thing about that is that Jacob also experimented with making Remix a Webpack plugin. And so now, module federation, like with Remix, it's just another plugin. So we're actually actively exploring that right now. We also a Vite plugin, ESBuild plugin. And so when you can bring in your own compiler, then using stuff like your own Babel plugins or your own whatever stuff you want to do, so long as you don't care how long it takes, you can still use Webpack. You take your half a second build and move it up to 3 minutes. But like, it's up to you if you want to do that. But the main motivation there is migrations.
Right.
We want to make it easier to migrate.
I think I have like a final deep dive question for you about Remix. I've been thinking about one of the greatest things in the Laravel community, Laravel ecosystem, is like Laravel has this concept of like service providers. And it allows for like a library to add like routes to your app, to add even UI to your app, to add like middleware to your app. And like I was like thinking about like the so like you can do, you know, there are libraries that like give you like a debug bar for Laravel, that like give you like a custom error page, that give you like telemetry, you know, like so many stuff. And I was thinking about like and also in that context, middleware, right? If you don't have the ability to sort of add middleware, to sort of intercept, it's like very hard to enrich, you know, the app in that way. So I was wondering like what if this is something that you guys talked about. I was thinking about like Remix Auth, for example, how
cool
it could have been like way more integrated if there was a way for like a library to sort of hook into, you know, the core in some way.
So now,
you know,
all of a sudden you just have a user on the context and you don't have to ever worry about going to get them.
Obviously, when you have a data
and
layer.
A/B tests and the cookies that you
absolutely.
When you have a data layer, it's obviously more powerful because you can even add migrations to your database, right? Stuff like that. Like auth with like Laravel is like two commands, you know, and like bam, you have migrations, you have UI, you have everything, you know?
So as far as the middleware question, that's a pretty common one. First, I'll say why we don't have it yet.
Dying to know.
Middleware is the worst. It really is so frustrating. When I was at PayPal working with Express middleware, you'd find a property on the request, and you're like, where did this come from? And so now you're hunting through all the middleware to find where it is because you need to add an additional piece of information on it or something. And so like at scale, middleware is awful, but at least the way that it's implemented most of the time. But the use case is necessary, especially for auth. There aren't a lot of use cases outside of auth. Maybe a couple, but not a lot.
Security, maybe.
Maybe telemetry.
Trimming inputs.
Getting the slash off.
Maybe the feature flags.
There aren't a lot, but they are there. And user auth is the biggest one for sure. So what we are thinking about, So the thing that makes it complicated for us is the loader's running in parallel. So it's not just running in parallel, but also in isolation. So if you're on a route, like you've got a list of users or contacts, you click on a contact, we're not going to load all of the loaders just by changing which contact you're looking at. We just run the loader that was responsible for the part of the page that is changing. So we can't rely on the root loader having had load the user for that one. So the solution that we're thinking about is having a route define a before loader export. So a thing to do before any loaders, myself or my children, run. And
component did mount, though?
So it's
component will mount.
And so it's just an opportunity, like it's not going to come back into the component. What you return from there will be accessible in that loader, that routes loader and all children loaders. The reason why it needs to be separate is because we need to be able to say, hey, this needs to run before everything else. Because that it puts you on the slow path. Like you cannot be faster than that function for any of those routes at any time. And so we do need to be careful about that. But if all of those loaders are going to be requesting the user anyway, then like you're nowhere off.
It doesn't matter.
You're just, now we've just improved DX. We just have to be careful that we don't hurt UX while we do it. So so that's probably what we're going to do to solve the middleware problem, or at least handle the same use case that you have for the middleware.
So now if you want something for like a subfolder, you would just do it in the parent layout.
Route. Yep, exactly.
Gotcha.
Yep, you got it. So as far as the plugins or the services, so you actually can probably do very close to the same thing right now. We still need the ecosystem to experiment with this, but you can define routes in the Remix config. And so you could have a Remix config thing where you say, hey, let's require that. In fact, I was experimenting with this myself to add my own support for MDX, so like built-in build time MDX support, because I want to take MDX support out of Remix. I think it was a mistake to include it. So I wanted to build something alongside that was just as easy and still built in as far as the build is concerned. Because some people don't want to request an MDX file at runtime, which makes total sense. If your blog is like really small, then like that's a lot of complexity just for a simple blog.
So
you have this routes in your config. It's async, and so you can go do whatever you want. Talk to a CMS for all I care, whatever you need to do. And in this case, you would have a library, like a Remix auth thing, where you say, hey, go make, here's how you define, here's the routes function. So go define all of your UI routes for the auth story. And I talked to clerk.dev. They are doing authentication, and they're looking into maybe doing something like that.
That's cool.
So we do have touch points for that type
of thing. And can you hook into the request and like?
Not yet, no.
That would be like
So
killer.
I think that, at least not on the client. We don't have any hooks for client-side requesting. But server-side, the before loader thing, and then we also have a way right now to hook into the response. Like before the response is sent, in your entry.server, you have the handle request. That's for the HTML rendering. But there's for any data requests that are made, we have handle data requests that you can export. And that
couldn't you handle like the client with like a service worker or something?
Yes, you could. Yep, you totally could do that as well if you really.
That kind of
to.
I heard like Michiko tell me about PartyTown, and that's how kind of they worked around like the whole idea with not having access to the DOM is using actually a service worker.
Oh, like offloading,
and then
and
there's
stuff.
A hack that they did with.
XHR.
Which
it's pretty crazy.
That was crazy.
It really is amazing. And they do have an integration with Remix, which, I think is pretty cool. His whole thing is I want to make get 100 out of 100 performance Lighthouse score on mobile. And the problem is you bring in Google Analytics and you're right on the edge. Just before you do any of your own code. I think that's a totally awesome goal, and it works really nicely with Remix as well.
That's awesome. Well, I think like we're
been going for a while, so
I can never stop talking.
Yeah, but don't worry about it. You got another meetup that we're going to.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You got Let's tomorrow.
Keep talking.
React. Are you going to talk in no TLV?
Yeah,
so?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
No TLV too.
Talking. So yeah, we're going to see each other.
See each other the whole week.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
All right, Ken. So thank you so much, man.
Yeah,
this
absolutely.
Has been awesome.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I enjoyed the conversation. Thank you for having me.
All right.
Amazing. All right, so let's sign off.
That's a wrap.
It's a wrap.